Right. Imagine this. You're forced to pay for a political campaign you just totally disagree with.
Oh, wow.
It sounds kind of wild, right?
Yeah.
Well, that was the situation for lawyers in California in the landmark Supreme Court case, Keller v. State Bar of California.
Okay.
And that's what we're going to dive into today.
Sounds good.
So maybe you can start us off by just explaining a little bit about what an integrated bar is.
Sure. An integrated bar is a system where membership in the State Bar Association is required to practice law.
Oh, okay.
And so in California, every lawyer who wants to practice law there has to be a member of the state bar and pay annual dues.
So it's not like a gym membership you can just kind of cancel. You know,
Exactly.
you have to be a lawyer, you got to pay those dues.
Right.
So that kind of sets the stage for the Keller case, right?
Yeah.
It's about whether those dues can be used for political activities
Yeah.
that some lawyers may actually strongly object to.
That's exactly right. It's really a clash between the bar's role in regulating the legal profession
Okay.
and an individual lawyer's First Amendment right to free speech.
Yeah, for sure. So let's break it down then. What exactly happened in this in the Keller case?
Well, in Keller, a group of 21 California attorneys actually challenged how their dues were being used.
Okay.
They filed a lawsuit arguing the state bar was using those funds for activities that really weren't related to regulating the legal profession or improving legal services.
Okay. Can you give us some specific examples of what those controversial activities were?
Sure. So the bar was using mandatory dues to lobby for, things like gun control or the abolition of the death penalty.
Oh, wow.
They were also filing amicus briefs in cases that dealt with controversial issues.
Okay.
And they even took positions on things, hot button issues through resolutions passed by the bar's conference of delegates.
I see. So they're getting pretty deep into politics, it sounds like.
Yeah, they're definitely getting into the political arena.
Yeah.
And these 21 lawyers, they felt like they were being forced to fund these activities
Right.
that they personally opposed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense why that would rub some people the wrong way. So how did this case move through the courts? I mean, it sounds like a pretty big deal.
It was a big deal. It started, in a trial court where the state bar actually won.
Okay.
But then the case went to the California Court of Appeal, and there things got interesting. The Court of Appeal actually reversed and likened the bar to a labor union.
Wait, unions? Why did unions get involved in all of this?
Right. Well, it all goes back to a really important case called Abood v. Detroit Board of Education.
Okay.
That case established this principle that unions can't use mandatory dues to fund political activities that are unrelated to collective bargaining. And so the California Court of Appeal saw parallels between that and the state bar situation.
So they're basically saying, you know, if a union can't force its members to pay for politics, neither should a bar association.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so where did it go from there?
From there, it went all the way up to the California Supreme Court.
Okay.
And the California Supreme Court actually overturned the appeal court's decision.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they argued that, the state bar isn't like a union, it's more like a government agency with broader powers to spend money.
So it sounds like a back and forth, but I have a feeling it didn't end there.
It didn't.
It went to the Supreme Court, right?
It did. The U.S. Supreme Court eventually took up the case.
Okay.
And in a unanimous decision, they actually sided with the lawyers who were objecting to how their dues were used.
Oh, wow.
They rejected that argument that the state bar was like a government agency and applied Abood's restrictions on union dues to the state bar.
Oh, interesting. All right, so now I'm really curious to hear why they sided with the lawyers. What was the Supreme Court's reasoning here?
So the Supreme Court basically said that while lawyers have to join the state bar and pay dues,
Okay.
those dues can only be used for activities directly related to regulating the legal profession. They can't be used for political or ideological activities.
That makes sense. So, like, I guess disciplining lawyers for ethical violations would be okay, but lobbying for, say, gun control would be overstepping.
Exactly. And actually, to drive the point home, the court quoted Abood.
Yeah.
And they said, compelled funding of ideology violates First Amendment rights.
Wow, that's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, it is.
So I can see how this is kind of a game changer, but how do we like how do we actually tell the difference between activities that are, you know, related to the legal profession and those that are more political or ideological?
That's a really good question.
I feel like it can get kind of murky.
Yeah, it's definitely not always black and white. But Justice Rehnquist, who wrote the majority opinion, he gave some helpful examples to kind of illustrate.
Okay, yeah, what did he say?
So he said that, for example, using dues to discipline lawyers for unethical conduct, that's clearly okay.
Right.
Because it relates to the bar's core function, which is regulating the legal profession.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, lobbying for gun control, that's a no-go.
Okay.
Because it's mostly ideological.
Yeah, I see the difference. Okay, so that makes sense. But I imagine there are some gray areas. Right?
For sure.
What about activities that are like kind of related to the legal profession, but also have that political angle?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. And the court recognized that the line can be blurry.
Okay.
There are going to be cases where it's debatable. But they were very clear that, you know, at the extremes, it's pretty easy to tell the difference.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like the Supreme Court really put their foot down and said state bars can't use these dues to push political agendas that their members might not all agree with.
Right. And it was a major win for free speech advocates.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I'm wondering, did this decision affect any other professions? I mean, not just lawyers.
Well, that's a great question. And it's one that legal scholars have been debating ever since Keller.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely raises questions about other professions where membership in a professional organization is mandatory.
Okay.
And those organizations engage in political or ideological activities.
Yeah, like what? Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, a good example would be medical boards.
Hmm.
So in a lot of states, doctors have to be members of the state medical board,
right,
to be able to practice medicine.
Right.
And these boards, they often engage in lobbying and other political activities.
Interesting.
And so the logic of Keller could potentially apply to challenge the use of mandatory dues in those professions as well.
So Keller might have kind of opened a can of worms in a way.
It certainly has the potential to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see how those legal challenges play out in other professions.
Yeah.
But for now, I think let's stick to the legal world. And in the next part, we can talk about how state bar associations adapted after Keller and all that good stuff.
Sounds good.
Great. So everyone stick around. We'll be right back.
Okay. So welcome back to our deep dive into Keller v. State Bar of California.
All right. So picking up where we left off, we were talking about how Keller could have implications for other professions,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like medical boards, for example.
Right, because they also have that mandatory membership and they engage in some political activities.
Yeah, so have there actually been any legal challenges in these other professions based on the Keller decision?
Well, there have been a few, but it's still kind of early. Mm. You know, the legal landscape is still developing.
Yeah.
But one example is a case in Texas involving the state medical board.
Okay.
A group of doctors there filed a lawsuit challenging the board's use of those mandatory dues.
Okay. And what were they objecting to specifically?
Basically, they were saying that the board was using those dues to fund lobbying efforts and political activities that they didn't agree with.
Interesting. And what was the outcome of that case?
Well, it's still going through the courts, so we don't know for sure yet.
Oh, okay.
It's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, for sure. It could set a precedent for other medical boards across the country.
Exactly.
So it seems like Keller is having this ripple effect, but we'll have to see how it all plays out.
Right.
For now, let's shift back to the legal world.
Okay.
And you mentioned earlier that state bar associations had to make some changes, become more transparent.
Right.
After Keller, how did that actually work in practice?
Well, one of the biggest changes was that they had to start providing much more detailed breakdowns of their expenditures. So, you know, they couldn't just lump everything together. They
okay.
had to be specific about, you know, how much they were spending on lobbying, litigation, disciplinary actions, all that.
So basically giving lawyers a clearer picture of where their money was going.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that gave the members more of an opportunity to, you know, voice any objections they might have.
Some more transparency, more accountability.
Exactly.
Seems like a positive step. Did the state bars push back at all against these changes?
Yeah, there was, you know, some initial resistance. Some argued that these new requirements were just too burdensome. But the courts were pretty firm that Keller required this level of transparency.
So they had to get on board.
Pretty much.
Now, did they come up with any like creative solutions to try to address these concerns that Keller raised?
Some of them did, yeah. One idea that gained some popularity was offering what they called opt-out options.
Opt out. Okay, what's that?
So basically, it meant that a lawyer who, let's say, disagreed with the bar's lobbying on a particular issue
Good.
could choose to have that portion of their dues either refunded or allocated to something else.
So they could say, "Hey, I don't want my money going to that specific activity."
Exactly.
That's interesting. Did that become a common practice?
It's not universal, but a number of states did adopt some form of an opt-out system.
Okay.
It's kind of a compromise,
Yeah.
trying to balance the bar's functions with, respecting the First Amendment rights of their members.
Right. So we see more transparency, we see more accountability, even these opt-out options. What about the overall relationship between lawyers and their state bars? Did this change things?
It's hard to say for sure. It really depends on the specific bar association and, the lawyers involved.
Okay.
In some cases, this increased transparency actually led to a more positive relationship.
Okay.
It opened up more dialogue. But in other cases, the Keller decision actually led to more conflict. Some lawyers still felt like the bar was overstepping its bounds,
Right.
even with these safeguards in place.
So it was kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. As we're talking about all these practical implications of Keller, it's easy to forget, the bigger picture.
Right.
This case was really about free speech.
Absolutely. At its core, Keller was a First Amendment case.
Yeah.
It was about protecting individuals from being forced to, financially support speech that they don't agree with.
Yeah.
And that principle, it goes way beyond just the legal profession.
Right. It makes you wonder where else in society we see this tension between, compelled speech and individual rights.
Yeah, for sure. One area that comes to mind is campaign finance.
Okay.
We have laws that limit how much money people and corporations can donate to political campaigns.
Right.
And the idea behind those laws is to, prevent undue influence by wealthy donors and to try to create a more level playing field.
Yeah.
But some people argue that those laws actually violate the First Amendment rights of donors who just want to support the candidates they believe in.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's a debate that's going on right now.
It is.
It's this constant struggle to find the balance between protecting free speech
Right.
and preventing corruption.
Exactly. And Keller definitely adds another layer of complexity to that whole discussion.
Absolutely. And it also raises questions about the role of professional organizations in a democracy.
Yeah.
Like, should they be allowed to use mandatory dues
Right.
to advocate for political causes, even if those causes are related to their profession?
It's a tough question.
Yeah, I don't think there are easy answers there.
No.
It's all about finding the right balance.
It is.
And in this particular case with Keller, the Supreme Court came down on the side of individual rights.
They did. And it's important to remember that it was a unanimous decision. All nine justices agreed that the state bar had gone too far in using those mandatory dues for things that weren't directly related to regulating the legal profession.
So that really shows a strong consensus, even among justices with different views,
Yeah.
that this idea of compelled speech,
Yeah.
at least in professional organizations, is something we need to be really careful about.
Exactly. And that's why Keller is such a landmark case.
Yeah.
Even though it was decided a while ago, it's still so relevant today. It reminds us that the First Amendment isn't just about protecting popular speech.
Right.
It's also about protecting the right to dissent, to disagree,
Yeah.
and to refuse to support things that you object to.
So even in a professional setting where you have to be a member, your free speech rights don't just disappear.
Yeah,
That's a
exactly.
really powerful message.
It is.
And it applies to all of us,
It does.
whether we're lawyers or doctors or just regular citizens.
Right.
Now, speaking of lawyers, there's another aspect of the Keller decision that we haven't really talked about yet.
Right.
And that's this distinction that the court made between the state bar
Right.
and the government.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point.
It's like peeling back the layers of an onion.
It is.
There's always more to uncover. So let's dive into that next.
Welcome back. So we were just about to get into that really fascinating distinction the Supreme Court made between the state bar and the government as a whole.
Right. I mean, it's a bit of a head scratcher, isn't it? Because the state bar, it does have a lot of power.
It really does. I mean, they regulate the entire legal profession. They set ethical standards. They can even discipline lawyers.
And they're responsible for licensing lawyers, right?
Exactly. So in a lot of ways, they function almost like an arm of the government.
Yeah, it's not just some like social club or something.
Right.
They have real authority.
Right. They have real teeth. But here's the thing. The Supreme Court was very clear that the state bar is not actually the government. Not in the same way that, say, Congress or a state legislature is the government.
So what's the difference?
Well, for one thing, the state bar isn't directly accountable to voters,
Okay.
and their funding comes primarily from those membership dues we were talking about, not from taxes.
So they're kind of in this weird in-between space.
Yeah, they occupy this interesting middle ground.
Powerful, but not exactly a government agency in the traditional sense.
Right. And that's what makes the Keller decision so nuanced, you know? The court was basically saying, look, the First Amendment implications of compelled speech, they're different when you're talking about a mandatory professional organization versus, like a full-fledged government entity that gets its power directly from the people.
So let me see if I understand this. They're saying you might not have the right to just veto every government expenditure on speech you disagree with,
Right.
but you do have a stronger claim when it comes to a professional organization like the bar, where membership is required for your job.
You got it. That's the heart of the Keller holding. It's really this delicate balancing act between individual rights and the need for a system of professional regulation.
Yeah, for sure. And this whole idea of mandatory membership organizations, it goes beyond just the legal
Oh,
profession.
absolutely.
Where else do we see this kind of blurred line between public and private?
Well, think about homeowners associations.
Okay.
They can set all kinds of rules and enforce them within a community,
Right.
but they're not technically government entities.
Right. Or even private universities that get government funding.
Exactly. That's another great example. They're not, directly accountable to the government in the same way as a public university, but they're also not completely private.
So there's this whole gray area.
There is. And Keller kind of provides a roadmap for how to navigate these tricky questions.
Yeah, it's like a landmark in uncharted territory.
I like that, a landmark in uncharted territory. It really captures the essence of what Keller does.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Keller, is there anything else that you think is essential for our listeners to take away?
I think the most important takeaway is that Keller is a powerful affirmation of free speech rights, but it also acknowledges that free speech rights aren't absolute. They have to be balanced against other interests.
Right, like the need for ethical standards in a profession.
Exactly. And Keller provides a framework for navigating that
Yeah,
balance.
it's all about finding that sweet spot.
It is. It's about finding that sweet spot. And I think for our listeners, especially those who are lawyers, the key takeaway is, you have the right to question how your state bar is using your dues.
Yeah, don't be afraid to ask questions, to demand transparency.
Exactly. Because knowledge is power, right?
Absolutely. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today.
We have.
This Keller case, it's complex, it's nuanced, it's thought-provoking.
It is. And it has implications that reach far beyond just the legal profession.
Yeah, it really makes you think about the power of individual rights, the importance of free speech, and how we balance those things with the need for professional standards and regulation.
It's a debate that's going to continue, as we move forward and encounter new challenges and new technologies.
For sure. Well, this has been a fantastic deep dive. Thanks for joining me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to all our listeners out there, keep those brains buzzing, and we'll catch you next time.